who knows what's accurate? You know, I mean, it makes the idea of truth very squishy, which is a huge component of memoir, is what is truth?
The idea of truth is very squishy. We need a t-shirt with that on it.
This is Daring to Tell, the podcast where writers read their true stories of personal daring, and then we talk about writing and life. I am Michelle Rado.
Nothing's gonna make me brave. Nothing's gonna make me brave. Nothing's gonna make me brave except doing what makes me scared.
And today, I am changing the rules. Why? Because I can. I have never been the person who crashes in on a deadline. In high school, I was the student who got their homework done ahead of time so I could watch TV at night. In college, only once did I pull an all-nighter. It was doing a harmonic analysis for an advanced music theory class, and it so wrecked me, I ended up embarrassing myself by being unable to function in the class that I had been cramming for. I won't even go into the scheduling that is baked into me from years in radio when everything was ruled by the clock. I always have been, and I think it is quite likely I shall remain a delayed gratification sort of person. Do the work now so I can relax later. And I do. But I have to confess, I have been crashing into the deadline for this episode. A deadline that is one I created for myself in the deal I struck with you, which is that on the first Tuesday of every month, I will have a Daring to Tell episode for you. And slowly, I've been coming to realize, if I'm the one creating the rules, I also get to change them, which is what I am going to do. I've been in a sort of hibernation, rethinking things frame of mind lately about this podcast. 5 years in, I find the premise I had in creating it still holds up. Talking with writers about writing and life. I've gotten some recognition for it, winning a silver from the Signal Awards for Best Indie Podcast. That gobsmacked me. I've been getting more pitches than I can keep up with lately, which, frankly, is a little bit of a problem, even if it's a happy one. And best of all, I have gotten to have some truly inspiring and insightful conversations with writers I honestly never dreamed I'd be able to meet, let alone talk with. Just this past year, being a sponsor for the Woodstock Book Fest gave me an opportunity to talk with Sari Botten and Alyssa Altman. I've gotten to talk with writers whose books I just happened to pull off a bookstore shelf, like David Stewart McLean. I've been able to bring attention to manuscripts that have not found publishers yet, like from the gorgeous writer who I was in a memoir class with, Ching Ching Tan. And also amazing, impactful writers living practically in my own backyard, like Nina Lichtenstein, Gretchen Cherrington, Phuc Tran, and Melanie Brooks, who also graciously introduced me to Oh My God, writer of writers, Abigail Thomas. What a conversation. I was so nervous before that one. Okay, I don't mean to be all name-droppy, but this is kind of what I've been doing, thinking about what I've done, the sorts of conversations I've had, and also thinking about where this may go. Because I'm me, and because for this endeavor, I get to make all the rules, here is my big change. I think I'm going to start releasing my episodes on the first Thursday of the month instead of the first Tuesday. Groundbreaking, I know. I'm not sure how this is going to work out for you. Probably won't materially change your life in any significant way, but there it is. Maybe it gets to you at a better place in your week for a long, delicious conversation and chance to listen to each reader and a decent chunk of their own work at the end of the work week as you're headed into the weekend. Just fine-tuning, really. Still monthly, still writers on writing and life, still writers reading their work. The reading part remains key to what I do, because one thing I've been more tuned into than ever is sound itself and voice and the vibrations that we create that somehow are uniquely ours. I just keep thinking more and more about what it is that's so magical about hearing a writer read their own true story. That is something I don't think I will ever tire of. That's really the biggest news I have, but since I get to change the rules, I'm going to do something else radical for me, and that is to right now urge you at this early point in the episode to go to my website, michellerado.com, sign up for the Daring to Tell newsletter, the redo. See, that's a little wordplay there. It's the place where I share the second thoughts and follow-ups that don't always occur to me until after the episode goes out, which is how it happens with so many of us, doesn't it? The old, oh, and by the way, I forgot to mention, or I forgot to ask, or the, and that made me think, ... Because that's an important part of any conversation, the residue, the reaction, the part that sticks around with us afterwards. So again, the redo at my website, michellerado.com. This leads me into the second summer hiatus episode I have for you today in lieu of a new writer reading their work. And it is this. When scrolling through my old episode files, I found one that's not something you've ever heard, but something where I was a guest on a different podcast, one that is now defunct, but was a brilliant shooting star of a podcast called And So She Left. That podcast racked up so many awards. I was truly honored to be a part of it. It was put together by a former student and dear friend, I will call her still to this day, Catherine Vassilopoulos, who is the host, and the amazing producer, Ethan Lee, who I got introduced to by even being involved in that podcast. And it was created by Cansulta CEO Alexandra Kapolos-Peters. It was so strange being on the receiving end of a podcast conversation. So speaking about voice and tone, I definitely hear my own uneasiness through at least the first half of this episode. But I was really touched by the thoughtful questions that were put to me from Catherine, who takes her own walk back through her memory lane when she explains the special circumstances where she and I met. I think I won't say anything more about this right now, but at the end of the conversation, maybe I will reminisce a little bit more about that time because, like this very podcast, some of the things we talk about and were exploring even back then remain through lines in what I think I'm still trying to do today. So with that, I hope you may enjoy this conversation from a podcast perhaps you have yet to still discover and love. And So She Left.
Hi, I'm Catherine Vassilopoulos. Starting my own venture wasn't easy. After a decade working in the corporate world, I realized that so many things were out of my control, like layoffs and changes in direction. I didn't like the instability. I didn't want that to define my whole career and professional story. And so I left. I started my own company and achieved more than I ever imagined. Now I'm on a mission to share stories from extraordinary entrepreneurs who are changing the world and who never gave up on their vision. Over the last few episodes, I've been talking to our guests about their entrepreneurial journey, their challenges and successes, and everything in between, and it's been great. This week, I'd like to take a moment to share a bit about my own journey and introduce you to a woman who played a key role in my own "and so she left" moment, only weeks after I left my corporate job in 2009. I met Michelle Rado in the summer of 2009 when I was studying audio engineering at the Banff Center for the Arts in Alberta, Canada. You see, as I was contemplating leaving my corporate job earlier that year, I had applied for a scholarship program at the Banff Center, never expecting to get in. It was a shot in the dark. And then one day, I received a phone call telling me I was one of the two women in Canada who were accepted in their audio engineering scholarship program. That was the parachute I needed to jump. And so, I left. I left my family and friends in Montreal and spent the summer in Banff with some amazing artists in residence, audio engineers, and musicians. At the time, Michelle worked as a producer at WGBH in Boston, and she was invited to mentor the students in the program for a few weeks. She showed up when I was at my lowest, when I was homesick and feeling vulnerable socially. She pushed my boundaries and shared personal and professional knowledge with me that made me feel like I was on the right track. She even pushed me to interview Pauline Oliveros, the pioneer of deep listening and an artist in residence at the time. This led me to produce my first radio documentary featuring her life and music, and Michelle was instrumental in helping me air it on NPR later in the fall of 2009. And it was a major stepping stone in starting my company, KVox Consulting. Today, Michelle generously shares with us her story, how she left the big city just before the pandemic to move to a smaller community in Maine to pursue creativity, writing, and podcasting, and to savor the next phase of life after a successful career in broadcasting. And I'm so honored to have her on the show today. I can't believe it's been almost 14 years to the day since our first encounter. You just never know where life will take you and what friends you will make along the way. Hello, Michelle. Hi.
Hello. Hi, Catherine.
Welcome to the program. I'm so, so excited to have you here today.
Thank you so much. I am so thrilled to be here with you today. This is a great honor.
It is a great honor for me because I really want the audience to know how special you are to me. You were a very key instrumental person in my life and in my trajectory, in my so-called "and so she left" moment. You were there for me when I got a scholarship to go to Banff at the Banff Center and to learn how to become an audio engineer. And you came along as a mentor for 2 weeks and I learned incredible things from you. So I just wanted to, you know, say thank you and to acknowledge that without you, a lot of things wouldn't have happened for me. So thank you so much.
Oh gosh, you can't even know what that means. I so appreciate that. And I was equally thrilled to be invited to the Banff Center to mentor, to teach you for a couple weeks. I think I will also add that we had such a great time. I think a little bit of maybe what we'll end up talking about today is that you never know what early things might happen to you that end up becoming pivotal or crucial in one's life as one goes on in their career and chosen profession.
Well, I think we made a good team. And I think that 14 years later, here we are talking to each other on a podcast platform and bringing together our lives. And it comes full circle. And as you said, you never know where, when you do something in the past, how it comes back to you in the future. And you yourself are a podcast producer now, and you have your own podcast called Daring to Tell. So I would love for you to tell us more about that.
The "and so she left" story for me was that I left my job in radio almost 3 years ago now and decided to start my own podcast, Daring to Tell, where I talk with memoir writers who read their true stories of personal daring. And what I sort of envisioned coming together for this before I knew I was going to be envisioning it was that I loved hearing writers read their own work. And so I started listening to audiobooks probably round about 2015. I was just curious about them. I thought, is it worth getting a subscription to pay to listen to this? But my husband, Phil, encouraged me, you know, like, go ahead, do it. If it's something you're curious about. I will also say I was recovering from gastrointestinal surgery around about that time. So I was spending a lot of time listening to things. So it just sort of became this thing that I would find one narrated by an author, and then I'd search for the next one and search for the next one. In 2020, my husband was retiring from broadcasting at that time, and we were going to be moving from Boston to Maine. I was in this class. My writing coach, Nadine Kenny Johnstone, was holding a class that was about writers building their own platform. It wasn't necessarily a writing class. She was offering ways for writers to work on this platform thing, and a podcast was one of the things that she had suggested. And of course, I was like, oh, well, that would be right up my alley, wouldn't it? So I sort of thought, okay, what would I do? I liked this idea of the writers reading their own stories. I also suddenly, like, because I thought, where am I going to get to know all these writers? Well, suddenly I was in a class filled with them. It sort of all came together. I launched it in January of 21. So since then, I have a podcast client, and I'm also now working on an audiobook with a writer that I met. So it's turned into something that I think is following a path that I never could have necessarily picked out for myself.
And yet these are all transferable skills. I'm listening to you talking about writing and audio production and interviewing and putting it all together. And these are all things that you did before in your previous professional life. And now it's just a matter of leaping into the new version of what you're producing.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And I did a lot of interviewing before, but I was never this person, the one talking on the mic. So that was one really interesting difference for me where I had to think and speak.
So how do you feel about that now? Now you are also part of the subject matter in the sense that you are the interviewer and you've inserted yourself into the story alongside the yeah. the writer or author. How does that feel?
Eek! It's, you know, sometimes it is very natural and other times it's really scary, I will say. And that's a little bit how I came up with my title, Daring to Tell. You know, it's hard to talk about a lot of these things. And there's the phenomena of, you know, we don't have to be intimidated by the things that we don't know. You know, sometimes I have people that I'm more intimidated by, and sometimes I have people I am less intimidated by. And I think largely the vast majority of writers are exceedingly generous in trying to share and grow. So that's where I try and bring it back to in my head to not get too like, I'm talking with this person and I have to get it right.
And yet I'm so surprised when I hear you say that because I don't ever imagine you being intimidated by anyone because of the amount of experience that you have and everything that you've done in your life. And that hearing you say that you're still, you get nervous at times, it's kind of humbling and it's and like, I don't believe you. Oh. I really don't believe you.
But oh, I want to know. You, like, what, you don't sit here and sweat with me in this room when I'm like, ah.
But what causes your brain to put certain people in the intimidation category versus not being intimidating?
A lot of it has to do with familiarity. Sometimes if it's someone I've gotten to know personally a little bit more, I'm more comfortable with that. Sometimes when it is a person who I know is a big deal, you know, it's like, oh, I was able to get this person. And I've been very excited about many interviews that I have been able to get. But those I get a little more. I just go, oh, this is a big deal. You should be, why are they talking with you? You know, like the whole imposter syndrome, which is something that I know I've heard people talk about on this show before.
And we put ourselves in categories or in tiers in society. And in the end, when you realize that we're all just working people and we are here to do a job, in the end, they want to do a good job too. Maybe they're intimidated of being on the podcast as well. You don't know what they're thinking. You just know
true.
They show up and they tell you their story, but you don't know what they're feeling. Tell me about why it's important for you to tell these stories in your podcast.
That's a really good question. I find myself gravitating towards the most important issues that we face as human beings on this earth while we are living and breathing. And so I definitely do tend to gravitate to the heavy stories, to the serious stories, because I know this isn't always true, but I do feel like there is something inherently hopeful about memoir. You feel like, well, the person survived to get through and tell their story. I mean, through the act of writing it, you know, something was okay. So I guess the transformative aspect of that is very inspiring to me, how to get through tough stuff. I think that we all benefit from hearing our stories told. I think there's sections of commonality and sections of difference where we can see ourselves in another person's story and see ourselves. And that's, it's like a compare and contrast of how to say, oh yeah, yeah, I went through that too. And I sort of joke sometimes that quite often we are crying on Dare to Tell, because they are really, really hard stories. And I love when someone gets back into their story enough to feel the emotion of what's there, because I know there's something cathartic about not only writing it, but then reading it out loud.
Let me ask you this, though. When you moved to Maine, how was that transition from big city life to then being in a rural area? And tell me about where do you live now? Like, what is it called?
Yeah, it's so, we have called our little farm here Flying Pig Farm.
I love it.
We have a pig on top of the barn that we have, which is used to be filled with livestock, I believe, many, many moons ago, a long time ago. Right now, it holds some paintings and some boxes. Maybe we'll be able to get it to be an artistic space, but we came here to have more space and more time for creative endeavors. We lived in the very heart of Boston, and we were in the big city, and I've always been a city person. So we moved to not rural Maine, but certainly more rural than where we were before. And so I look out at our backyard right now, which the lawn needs mowing. There's wildflowers growing everywhere. I was just, before we signed on, I was watching these two bluebirds and some tree swallows fighting it out over these bluebird boxes that we have in our backyard. This is all to say, I have learned so much about rural life, and I have barely scratched the surface. I mean, we're very close to all kinds of conveniences. But when we moved here, I started a newsletter. It started off every Friday morning. I would sit down and something would pop up about what had happened this past week, and many of them revolving around either household things going awry or bugs, which is one of the themes that I can't get away from. I really still obsess over bugs. Like, why am I so bug phobic? Which bugs have I started to try and become friends with? And which ones? I know.
I'm cracked up because it's so funny. When you do move to a new place, you get to know the new bugs in the area.
Yeah, I know. I had never seen a stink bug before. I will say I'm very thrilled that what I have not seen here is those nasty centipede, the one with those beige colored egg. Ugh. Yeah, I don't want to think about it.
I loved your stories about the repairmen coming in and out of the house. Oh my God.
I know. I felt like they were all of my new friends. I'm like, oh, is it Steve? Or, yeah, there's like, oh, your oil tank is about to rust through. And, all those things.
I loved reading those weekly things because it kept us connected to what you were going through and the little details right. that you would include, like the mouse or the little jogs that you would take out in on the streets and get to know some neighbors. And it felt like I was there with you. So I enjoyed that so much.
Well, I was going to say, I think that you hit on a few key things. One is, who am I writing to? Because it's sort of like that question, who is our audience? And my audience, I knew them. So they were friends and colleagues and people who had followed me. And it was very specific. And I think I also hit on something that gives me a lot of momentum and energy, which is usually like sort of waxing about something I'm slightly freaked out about and obsessed over, doing something totally new, which was moving to a place that I never imagined not being a city person. So that was a big part of it too. And writing to people who I could imagine telling them what was going on in our lives as we were building a business for myself, even though I wouldn't have said that much at that point.
And so now that you're there, do you find that you found your creative space? Do you find that there is this haven?
Yeah. And that's the thing that I think that in an earlier time, working in the city, being really busy, go, broadcast 24/7, I couldn't have imagined not doing that. And I guess that's another thing when I think about when one takes a leap away from the known. After the fact, it seems like I forgot all the stuff that I did before. I don't know if that's common for people. Once you make that big leap, you go, all right, well, that other thing was good for me, but I was ripe for it. I was really ripe for it.
Yeah, because when you leave that previous space, you leave behind the intensity of the work. You leave behind everything that is all-consuming, and it slowly dissipates into the past. There's always that moment where it just quietly dissipates and then you don't have to worry about it anymore because it's not in your space anymore.
Yeah, exactly. It is a very funny and ethereal and, dare I even say, sort of magical thing to try and say, what is the thing that I need to be doing next?
How do you make things yours? Because you make a leap, but then you have to make it yours.
I like how you phrase that. That was also scary. I think that part of the journey that I've been trying to live as I've done this, as I've done the writing, I've always oriented myself around the goal of the place that I've been. It was a big leap to say, what do I want to do? I mean, I recall sitting here at this very desk and going, well, what is my thing that I want to do next? And that's where it ties in a lot with some of the writing that I'd been doing, because that has been about the theme of shedding or excavating other learned ways of life. So I grew up in a religion that we did not see doctors. And I also was taken out of science class when we were going to learn about medicine. It's funny because growing up, not going to the doctor, not going to the hospital, not taking medicine, we relied on prayer for this. But the coming out of class, like that's the thing that as I've thought about this and written about this more, that's the part that's almost been a deeper thing to try and find my own confidence in, because I always had this feeling that everyone else is learning about something that I won't know, and what do I not know? So this sort of deficit of understanding the world, that has been a pivotal theme in my writing. As I mentioned, in 2015, I had gastrointestinal surgery. I had a large polyp in my rectum that had not quite gotten to cancer yet. So I was happy that it got caught in time. But I had surgery. They removed oh, maybe about half of my rectum. And I like to say, I still have half of my rectum. The writing has come into play in feeling my gut, a literal thing and a metaphorical thing. That what do I really feel? What do I want? I don't always know. And just discovering that I don't always know has been huge. And so the question of how do I make something mine, that really is the exact question. And I have been feeling my way through that, like one episode at a time, because I feel like, oh, what's the thing I'm curious about? And allowing myself the indulgence to say, I'm really curious about this book. Let me read this book. Who is the person? Where do they live? Can I write to them? Would they be on my podcast with it? Would they talk with me? All these little steps have been part of me. I really feel like I'm walking around with blinders on trying to figure out what the next part is. Mm-hmm. But I have gotten far enough that I feel like I'm starting to trust myself to go with it. Whereas before, I would always look externally for what should I do.
I love that you said that sometimes you don't know what's next or what the next direction is or what you want. Because I go through that all the time. What do I want? I don't know the answer. Yeah. And they always say, well, meditate or ask yourself again tomorrow. Days can go by and I'm like, I don't know what I want. I don't know.
And years can go by.
Yeah. And you're almost wishing that someone else could tell you what you want.
Yes.
But that's not somebody else's job to tell you.
Exactly.
And the fact that you were taken out of science class, I imagine that it has made you a very curious person as an adult. Because I can't imagine as a child feeling excluded from the learning process when your classmates are in there and you're not.
I do think I've always been a curious person, regardless. In a funny way, I'll say, I think it made me a very fearful person because it made me feel like the things I don't know might hurt me. And this is sort of conversely, not knowing it could hurt me. Like from the religious standpoint, I was taught that believing in it can make it true. Yet, not knowing it in my full physical bodily self says, what do I not know? So that baked in insecurity, it's really a toughie.
But I imagine also that talking to different people on a podcast brings up themes and stories and things that help you understand things in life.
Trying to understand my experience through seeing, feeling, reading, hearing someone else's experience. It literally is the thing. It's like those blinders. I go, oh, yeah, that part was me. This other part wasn't. There's an author I just spoke with fairly recently, Charlotte Maya. Charlotte had a memoir that came out this past year in February called Sushi Tuesdays. It was about the suicide death of her husband.
Wow.
So right there, you go, oh, there's a tough topic for you. I thought I'd like to read that book. Suicide has been in my family, on both sides of my family. On one side, it was an uncle. On the other side, it was like a great grandfather. I got the book. I started reading the book. I thought, oh, I think I'd want to talk with her. I start reading the book. Well, it turned out she was also raised as a Christian Scientist, the same religion that I was.
Oh.
So I almost like my jaw almost fell off my face. I was like, oh my God, she had a very different experience than me. I consider myself somewhat angry and quite bitter, and I have been trying to work out that anger. She was far more accepting and open to different ideas that all might work together. And she didn't have these hard and fast rules that I have always felt, this sharpness of rules. That's the part that I've been saying, why do I have to be so rigid about things, like to feel that this is going to be wrong if you believe this thing, and if you're not going to believe it, then you better throw the whole thing out. I mean, there's all of these little adages we have, throw the baby out with the bathwater, that sort of simplify those things.
Mm-hmm.
So what kind of family legacy do we grow up with, learning things about our family from past generations that influence us in ways that who knows what's accurate? You know, I mean, it makes the idea of truth very squishy, which is a huge component of memoir, is what is truth?
The idea of truth is very squishy. We need a t-shirt with that on it.
Yeah.
But can I ask you something? As you were talking before about the hard rules versus this woman who figured out a way to not have to obey or go by all those very harsh rules.
Mm-hmm.
Does that any of it have to do with, you know, the more rules you put in place, the less trust you have in yourself? And the fewer rules you put in place, then the more you can learn to trust yourself and break free from all of those constraints.
That's a very good synthesis of it, Catherine. I like that a lot. Yeah, I think that the rules help us kind of stay in line. But I think it just becomes a lot more confusing when we have to ask ourselves, what is the right thing for me? And you might not know something's not until you've sort of stumbled off the path for a little bit and find yourself covered in ticks. Can we just...
Are you thinking about your gardening?
I'm thinking about the gardening. I know. The ticks are the nemesis here in Maine. Yeah, I think that to figure out what the lived truth is, what the personally applicable truth is, I've always been so strongly attuned to the idea of how can you know any answers without understanding circumstances? You know, the circumstances dictate so much, and something that's the right choice in this circumstance might be totally wrong in another one, but makes sense in yet a third. So my writing is to try and figure out how that might apply to me as I go forward. And the podcast is sort of the creative endeavor to help guide me, to put me on a path towards doing something where I think I can really help people do, you know, like I had asked Charlotte, I said, so I noticed you don't have an audiobook. Were you going to read one? And she said, oh, I really want to read my own audiobook. And we had a discussion about it. And I was like, little Miss Insecurity over here. I said to her, if there's anything I am 100% confident about, it's that you will be the perfect voice for your own audiobook. You should do that. So it's funny when you're someone who maybe you realize part of what you love doing is helping other people do their thing. I don't know how much you relate to that, but
I would love hearing the story of what makes them happy and what has made them go from one thing that was a stepping stone to then leaving that and then moving on to the next part of the journey.
The other thing, if I didn't say this expressly before, I feel like multiple simultaneous projects, they all help each other. So when I feel stuck about what I'm writing, I can go work on the podcast. When I am finished with one episode and I'm not sure what I'm doing, I can go try and find another book that I want to read or another author. Can I tell one little Catherine story I was thinking of?
Sure.
When I was thinking about talking with you and about bravery and about my runs that I go on and would go on that you've read about in those newsletters. We met in Banff. It was July. It was light until at least 10 o'clock at night. And you lived where the students lived in the student housing there. And you had to walk through like some wooded areas to get to where we were. And you were talking about the bears. And I was thinking many four-letter words. You have to be scared of bears. And you said, I just make all this noise. I sing. I'm really loud. I walk through the woods singing to myself. Well, one of my newsletters, where you might recall, a neighbor had told me she saw something that she thought might have either been like a bobcat or a lynx or some wildcat, like right. And she told me this when I was about as far away from my house as I could have been. I put jingle bells on my sneakers for like a week after that. And then I'm sure my neighbors all thought I was insane. They probably still do. But I thought, oh, I've got to be just like Catherine. I'm going to make as much noise as possible. I often have my headphones on and I'm singing loud anyways, when hopefully no one is listening. Who knows?
That's the best.
But I always remembered that.
I love that you remember that. Yeah, I still always, I sing to myself all the time just to keep things interesting.
Thank you so, so much to Michelle Rado for joining me today. You can listen to Michelle's podcast, Daring to Tell, by clicking the link in the episode description. We would love to hear your feedback. Sharing what you liked about this episode in a review would be the best way to help us make the show even better. And So She Left is made by Consulta and Ethan Lee. We'll be back next Wednesday with a new episode. Our music is by Chris Zabriskie, edited for your enjoyment. You can find a list of all the songs you heard here in the episode notes. I'm Catherine Vassilopoulos, and thanks for listening. Love you all.
That episode came out in June of 2023, so basically add 2 years to each of those markers that Catherine and I were talking about. That time in Banff, wow, it was so otherworldly to me. I remember after long flights and then a long drive from Calgary into Banff, seeing all those mountains and feeling vertigo from being inside such a dizzying and different landscape, not to mention the lightheadedness because of the elevation and the fact that even by 11 at night, there was still light in the sky. It was totally different than anything I had ever experienced before. Just a full experiential purge. And then spending those days just talking and thinking about audio and sound and listening and talking with people who inspire us. I had forgotten about Pauline Oliveros, and I think it's funny that Catherine brought that back because, of course, I would have said, oh, yeah, go talk with her. And rediscovering her work resonated with all these themes, literally. She is no longer with us on the face of this earth, but if you go look her up, she developed the Center for Deep Listening. Very interesting stuff. A few other things stand out to me from this conversation, too. First, mentioning being taken out of class when disease was the topic in science class. That really has continued to be something that I see how deeply it cut within me. Something that seems like such a small action. Taken out of class because of perceived offensive, inappropriate, unapproved information, whatever you want to call it. It's a big deal. Second, something that also really surprised me, mentioning sharpness of rules. When I started thinking about what I wanted to say at the opening of this episode about changing the rules, I didn't know or remember that that was part of this episode. I thought I was coming up with this brand new thing, so that's kind of funny. Last is the ongoing question of what's next. I actually know at this very moment two writers who you will hear coming up on new episodes, each with a brand new book, one author, very established, the other with a debut memoir. One about traveling the globe and discovering an inner world, the other a contemplation on perfection and imperfection through pottery. I can't wait to share these with you. A reminder about my newsletter. Yes, the outgrowth of that one I was talking about with Catherine. Sign up for it free at my website, michellerado.com. Also, be sure to follow this podcast in your podcast app of choice so that it will automatically pop up on the first Thursday. Yes, the first Thursday of each month. A special thanks again to Catherine Vassilopoulos, Ethan Lee, and Alexandra Kapilos-Peters for And So She Left. As always, a giant smooch of thanks to my singer-songwriting husband, Phil Rado, for all the music that you hear in each and every episode. And most and best of all, my thanks to you for daring to listen. I'll catch you in September.
And nothing's gonna break my fall. There's nothing in the protocol. It's like swimming up waterfall or taking away the ground. Taking away the ground. It's like taking away the ground.